quarter, we've been asked to cover what we normally refer to as the Christian graces in 2 Peter 1. And we started in this series, I believe, back in May the 20th, as this indicates. And I just wanted to review with you just a little bit tonight about what we've done and where we are and where we're going. And if you don't have a Bible, you should find one on the back of the pew in front of you. We, of course, had an introduction, and in that introduction, I emphasized something that's in verses 12, 13, and 15, where three times Peter says in this chapter, I put you in remembrance, or I bring you to remembrance. And he was emphasizing to them the importance of reminding ourselves of those things that we sometimes know or tend to know, and yet to some extent we may forget. And then we dealt with diligence, which is before and after the list of seven. And we did that particularly to emphasize personal effort. And I continue to emphasize this in every lesson, because what we get out of a lesson like this, what we learn from any lesson, is going to depend more on our own personal effort than anything else. And then we studied the subject of virtue. And last week, Brother Jack Hilliard taught the class on the subject of knowledge. I listened to his tape this afternoon to see what he covered, and I appreciate the lesson that he taught. And in that, he emphasized some of the same things that we've been emphasizing all along, that it's not the sense that we arrive at 100% faith and then add something else, but it's that we add these things to each other and that they're intertwined with one another. And I appreciated the emphasis that he placed upon the idea with knowledge, that it has to do, at least in part, with the ability to determine between what's right and wrong. And this is a very important part of our study. Tonight we're going to be studying temperance. Of course, next week will be Vacation Bible School, then patience, and then Christian training series. And that's about normal for the course around here, Brother Sewell and Brother Gardner. We have something going on all the time across the street and connected with our work, and we're thankful for that. And then we'll have godliness, brotherly kindness, and love that will end the seven. And then I'd like for us to look at the end results. And then I'd like for us to sort of sum up in that last lesson on the sources for help. What's suggested in here is to where we go to find the help, to help us to grow in this sense. When we were studying virtue just a few weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago now, we came to the close of that study, and I had put this up before us. I put it up again tonight because I think it not only has to do with virtue, but in a sense sort of suggest the whole idea that's involved in these seven Christian graces. The idea of grow up, speak up, and stand up. And we certainly need that today. If there's ever been a time that we need maturity, it's today. We need the milk of the gospel, but we also need the meat of the gospel, Hebrews 5. And we need to grow up ourselves. In fact, we're not going to be able to do much a job speaking up and standing up unless we grow up. But I do want to continue to emphasize something that I said the other day that I think is very important when we were talking about growing up. There's a difference in being childish and being childlike. There are some childlike characteristics that we need to keep as long as we live. In fact, one of the ones that's mentioned in 1 Corinthians 14:20 is malice, isn't it? And malice be ye children. He means by that, children have a tendency not to hold what? Grudges or hatred in their hearts. They tend to be more forgiving. One minute they're fighting and the next minute they're playing together. And we adults, we get into an argument. It takes us a long time to even speak to each other sometimes. But there are childish qualities that we need to understand, and we need to grow out of them. Have you ever had anybody say to you, you're acting like a child? If you haven't, you've said that to your children as they grew up and ought to be maturing a little bit, haven't you? So the idea of growing up and speaking up and standing up. Now, let me mention for just a minute next week, our Vacation Bible School starts Sunday night. And we'll start the session Sunday night at 4:45, which will be the time that we normally start on Sunday night. And then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we will start at 7. The adult class for the last 2 or 3 years has met during the first 2 sessions of the 3 sessions that the others meet. Those of you who are local realize that we're using the centers, the Bible centers. In fact, they're building Jericho over in the activity center. And understand that the last night all the kids are going over and march around it seven times, and it's going to fall. It's going to be quite an interesting vacation Bible school. But we're going to try to work the adult classes each night so that we will let you out about 2 or 3 minutes before the third session so that you can walk down to some of the rooms or over to the activity center and watch the presentation and see some of these yourself. And I think I can get the teacher that's going to be teaching the adult class to do that. Judy's husband is going to be teaching the adult class this year. And for those of you who are visiting, my wife's name is Judy. Brother Ron Butterfield has taught the class, I believe, the last 2 years. And I have the opportunity to teach it this year. Normally, in Vacation Bible School, here's what happens. We have an excellent crowd on Sunday night and what? Wednesday night, and very few on Monday night and Tuesday night. That seems to be one of the marks of the Church of Christ. But let's change that this year, and I want you to put forth an effort to try to be here. There'll just be 4 nights. I'm going to use 8 lessons that are illustrated. I'm going to use the lesson, maybe a few of you that were here about 10 years ago that will remember this. I have a lesson that I use on shoes, where I bring a box of shoes, got about 11, and I wear 14s and 15s. And that's enough to gain attention in and of itself. But I plan to use 2 object lessons. I plan to use 2 chart lessons. I'll use 2 flannel graph lessons, and I'll use 2 using the overhead projector during the 4 days. Now, I'm also designing these lessons to be dealing with some very basic Bible principles so that if we have visitors from the community, adults that visit with us, that'll give them an opportunity to learn some very basic principles. So let me encourage you to invite your friends. Some of these lessons will deal with the very basic plan of salvation, Christian living, some things of that nature, and we hope that you will be involved in that. Now, having said that, tonight we want to get into a discussion of temperance. Add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance. There are some words that are sort of synonyms to the word temperance. And I put 4 more here. I thought of another one or two after I had prepared this. But I think this is basically what's being talked about when he says, add to your knowledge temperance. In fact, I would guess that several of you are reading from a version that translates that self-control, aren't you? Instead of temperance. And there are other versions that translate it with especially the 4th word that's there. In some places, they put the little prefix in, incontinence there. But temperance is the same thing as self-control. It's interesting that this is emphasized. What have we been emphasizing through this entire study? Personal responsibility, right? Personal responsibility, self-control. I think too many times we have a tendency to expect someone else to control the situation, and if it's not controlled, we have a tendency to blame someone else. I don't buy all that's being said, that all the problems today are because of a rough childhood. I just don't buy that. Now, it may have contributed to it, but I don't believe we can blame everything on somebody else. There's a need today, if there's ever been a need, of accepting personal responsibility. Now, we've emphasized that from the standpoint of work and effort, but we also need to recognize it from the standpoint of controlling ourselves, controlling our emotions, controlling our words, controlling our actions, self-control. Another word that I probably should have put up there is the word discipline. We usually think of discipline from the standpoint that it's administered from one person to another person. But isn't there such a thing as self-discipline? And in the work of the church, for example, if all of us would tend to discipline ourselves, would that do away with the need of most any other kind of discipline? Now, the Bible talks about church discipline. We don't talk much about it. We don't deal with it much. But there's something that comes before withdrawing fellowship. And I think one of the reasons that we don't talk about that much is because we've not emphasized what comes before. One of the first things that comes is self-discipline. That word restraint. This is a problem today in many areas. I think it's a problem in our schools. I hear teachers saying our hands are tied. we just can't restrain children like we used to. When I was going to school, if someone got a spanking at school and went home, what happened? He got a spanking at home, right? Now if he gets a spanking at school and goes home, dad goes to spank the teacher. That's about the way we've turned it around. Self-discipline is very much involved. And as we teach our children, we need to teach them to learn to have self-discipline and to make some decisions for themselves. Maybe a problem, and I think as I look back, this may be where one of my problems was in rearing a family. I may even today want to make decisions for my children that they need to be making for themselves. In fact, sometimes we don't let them develop self-discipline as much as we should, and then when they get away from us, they're not trained and ready to do that. But these are just some words that suggest the idea that's involved in temperance: self-control, restraint, continence, abstinence. Somewhere, and I don't remember exactly where I got this, but I saw two definitions of the word that I liked. Number one, to take a grip on oneself. And number two, to hold oneself in. Now that might help even physically. But to hold oneself in, to take a grip on oneself. You ever have any conversations with yourself? You ever talk out loud to yourself? You might want to be careful where you do that. I was doing that sometimes. Somebody asked me about it. I told them I always like to talk and listen to a smart man. But they didn't seem to get the point. I'm not suggesting that you talk out loud to yourself, but I am suggesting that you have some conversations with yourself. You remember anybody in the Bible in the New Testament that had a conversation with himself? Prodigal son said to himself, "I will arise." There's another one that's from a negative standpoint. There are several, but there's another one that I think of. You remember the rich farmer that had all the crops? What did he do? He sat down and talked to himself. And he said, "Self, well, I would suggest that you do some talking with yourself. I even have some pretty good arguments with myself, don't you?" Now, that's when I have difficulty determining who wins. Either you can look at it that nobody wins or nobody loses. Either way you want to look at it. That's almost like the little boy that went out in the yard with his ball and bat, and all of us have done it. You know how you throw up the ball and swing like this, and his dad was watching, and he missed it. He threw it up the second time, and he missed it. Threw it up the third time, missed it. His dad, looking out the window, said, "You're not much of a batter, are you?" He said, "Oh, but what a pitcher." So when you, we'll explain that to the rest of you after the class is over. When you talk to yourself, you may have some arguments. But I'd like to suggest that we need to do more of that. I think Jesus even gives an example of that. You remember the times that he would get in a boat and row out away from the shore to get away from the crowd? And the times that he would maybe take a hike, as we would say, a trip and go into the woods and just walk or to get away from the crowds? I think he was doing that to what we would say meditate. And I guess what I'm saying when I say you need to learn to talk to yourself, I'm saying you need to learn to meditate and think things through. You know, I'm convinced that for those of us who are Christians, especially a group like this tonight, that we know most of the time what to do. Now, Jack, this may not go completely with your lesson last week, because Jack was emphasizing that we need to continue to learn, didn't you, and grow. But don't you think in general that those of us that are here tonight know basically the difference between right and wrong? Why do we make the mistakes that we do? I just didn't what? Think. I just didn't think. I believe if we can get people to think, and that's what I'm talking about in talking to ourselves. So to take a grip on oneself, to hold oneself in is what we're talking about. There are three areas that are especially involved when we're talking about temperance. One of these is abstaining from that which is always wrong. And there are some things that are always wrong. You just cannot make them right. For example, 1 Corinthians 7 says, "To avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife and every woman have her own husband." What does that teach? Fornication is what? Always wrong. What he's talking about there is a relationship with anybody that's not a spouse. There's no way you can make that right. So there are times where we need to abstain from things that are always wrong. They are evil in and of themselves. Think about the list that's given in Galatians chapter 5, called the works of the what? Works of the flesh. Wouldn't that be something that's pretty well always wrong? You might think about Romans 1, where he talks about those who change the natural relationship into that which is not natural, and he goes ahead and mentions several things there, gives a list of evil things. There's some things that is just wrong, and we need to learn to abstain from that. But there are some other areas where we might even need to abstain from some things that are lawful. Some things that are lawful. Is it lawful for me to drive 70 miles an hour on the interstate now in most places in Tennessee? But could there be circumstances where I would need to abstain from driving 70 miles an hour on the interstate? Some of the things that are mentioned in the New Testament like that, you remember talking about the eating of meat offered to idols? Paul said what? It would be lawful for me to eat, but if it causes my brother to stumble, I'll what? I'll not eat it. So there are some things that might be lawful for me to do that I need to learn to abstain from that. And there may be a lot of circumstances like that. I like what Paul said. He said, I became all things to all men that I might by all means win some. If you are allergic to something, although it might be lawful for you to use it, what should you do? Abstain from it. There may be different reasons for abstaining from something that would be all right. I'm allergic to onions. I wish I were not, because I have to avoid all the casseroles that are brought to all the meals unless I know. And Jay, you remember what I told you when you were over here? They put onions. I'm expecting them to put them in ice cream any time now. They can't even get green beans cooked without onions in them most places now. But there are some things that you have to abstain from. Our oldest daughter is allergic to shrimp now. She didn't know she was until about 2 years ago, and she had an allergic reaction. She was at the hospital when she had it. If she had not been, then she probably would not have lived. There are some things that would be lawful for us to do, but we abstain for different reasons. Some of you remember a little story that I've told from time to time about the fellow who mashed his finger and somebody was pitying him. He said, it's mine, I'll mash it again if I want to. Was it lawful for him to mash it? I suppose so. But I would highly suggest that he abstain from it. And then there's the idea of moderation in all lawful things. And I need to sit down and let some of you teach this part of the lesson on some subjects, especially eating. Now, I don't think I'll take that any further. I don't want to talk about gluttony tonight. If anybody responded, I wouldn't know who to ask to lead the prayer. Most of us have a lot of trouble along that line. Now, some people, in trying to excuse other things, I've had people in talking about alcoholism and being addicted, they'll say, well, that's no worse than overeating. I'm not for sure that I can buy that. But I would suggest that especially those of us who preach not let our stomachs get so big that we have to rest them on the podium in order to teach the class. Any of you ever know Brother Ira Douthat? Brother Gardner, you knew him, didn't you? Brother Douthat had got to be pretty large, and he had a rather large stomach, and he was on a plane one day, and the stewardess came by, tapped him on the stomach, and said, beer belly? He said, no, chicken coop. And I guess that's where some of us preachers may have the problem. What about watching television? Can that become a problem? And I'm not just talking about the programs that we don't need to watch, but I mean even watching good things. Can that become a problem? What about recreation? Do you know some people who are so involved in golfing or fishing or something like that that they can't do anything else? Nothing wrong with golfing or fishing in moderation. And buddy, I'm in moderation on that one, aren't I? Buddy's been asking me to come up and fish, and I can't... Well, I haven't found the time to go up and fish with him yet. But moderation is involved. And this is where temperance is involved, self-control. So I think these three areas are the three that we need to think about. Abstain from that. If it's wrong, it's wrong. Let's don't do it. But if it's lawful and it's going to run over somebody or hurt somebody's feelings, let's be careful. Or if it's going to hurt us, and then even something that might be good in moderation, or that is not in moderation, as long as it's in moderation, we need to be sure that we abstain in that sense. Here's another approach that I want us to look at. What I'm trying to do is to just simplify some things. I know these lessons are simple, but I think we need to do this because we've heard this passage over and over and over. I sat down and thought from the standpoint of what are the points of control? We talk about temperance. We talk about self-control. What are we talking about? I think especially sometimes when we talk to our young people, we preach them a straightforward lesson that this is what needs to be done, and maybe they leave a bit confused as to what the specifics are and exactly what we can do to overcome the problem. If you're going to tell me to take hold of something, you need to show me where the handle is. It's going to be hard for me to take hold of it if I don't know where the handle is. And so I think, at least as I look at this and think about my own life, that here are some of the points of control where we can control problems in life. One is controlling our thoughts. And I put that first on purpose. What does Proverbs 23:7 say? As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. If you've got something in a glass and that glass is knocked over and you spill it, what'll pour out? Whatever's in it. You can't pour milk out of a glass if it's full of water. You can't pour something out if it's not in it. And so there's where we start. I also put Matthew 5:32 up there because this is probably the one example that we especially remember. Whoso looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery already with her in his heart. That's the thought sin, isn't it? Is it possible for you and me to commit sin and nobody know about it except us and God, except the individual and God? Probably happens more than we admit to ourselves. There's one good thing about that. If I can commit a sin that nobody knows about except me and God, how can I straighten it out? Just between me and God, right? And that's got a fly after me up here. I must be sweeter than I thought. Point of control, number two, desires. I suppose that all of us, at one point in life, or maybe different points in life, has dealt with the problem of having the wrong desire. And this could be in many different areas. Sometimes do we desire certain things in life that we really don't need, that might be beyond our ability to afford? And there are areas today, some of the areas particularly, that have to do with some types of immorality, where people say, well, I was born this way and I can't help it, or this is my desire and I can't control it. I suppose it's possible for all of us to have desires that are not good. But we need to learn to control those desires. That's where it is. In fact, there in James 1:14, he says, when lust hath what? Conceived, it brings forth sin. It's a possibility that we could all at least entertain a thought that is not good and then put that thought under control. I suppose that's a process of growth that we're talking about. Anybody remember what Proverbs 4:23 says? Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Out of it are the issues of life. I remember Jesus saying, I believe it was Matthew 15, that it's not what a man eats or takes into the body that defiles him, but what? What comes out of the body comes forth from the heart, and this is that which defiles a man. And then I believe it is helpful for us to control the places that we are, the places we go. That passage in Matthew 26 is the time that Peter denied Christ three times. And I'm sure this is not the only factor, but one of the factors involved in his denial was what? He was at the wrong place, wasn't he? He was at the wrong place. I think sometimes as I go through town down here, maybe on Friday or Saturday night, and see so many young people parked along the side of the road, and I have no idea what's going on, and I don't mean to be judging, but if there is something going on that's wrong, could an innocent person be there and have problems just by being there? We need to watch the places that we go. I'm convinced that all of us have a breaking point in any area of thought. And one of the best ways to be sure that we don't reach that breaking point is what? Stay away from it. Stay away from it. I'm convinced that the best way for me not to be an alcoholic is never take the first drink. Because I know how I love to drink milk, and I know how I am with Cokes. I've never had all I wanted. I've had all I could hold a few times, but never all I wanted. And I don't know how I would react to certain temptations dealing with immoral problems. That's one of the reasons that I've never danced. I have another reason that is very helpful. I don't know how. I came very close one time. I was at a convention, and they wanted us to get acquainted, and they said, the boys get in a circle behind the girls. I didn't see anything wrong with that. And in a few minutes, they said, pair off for the dance. The girl that was in front of me turned around and said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm getting out of here. And I did. That's the closest I ever came to being involved in a social dance. I don't know what I could do under some circumstances. So I believe I need to control the places. Then I need to control the associates. Was it Will Rogers that says you're a part of what? Every man that you meet. Be not deceived. Evil companionships corrupt good morals or manners. I think we need to watch the ones with whom we associate. We are made in such a way that we tend to give in little by little by little, inch by inch. And so we need to watch our associates. And one thing that I try to emphasize to our young people is that there's such a thing as good peer pressure as well as bad peer pressure. I think this is one of the things that needs to be emphasized with Christian education. If we can get our young people to associate with good young people, doesn't that help them in the same sense that we have bad peer pressure? And then the opportunities. And I suppose these last three are at least second cousins to each other. But opportunities, avoid the opportunity for a temptation to come up. If you can avoid the temptation, you don't have to deal with the temptation. 1 Thessalonians 5:21 says what? Read the next verse. I've got the wrong one. It should be verse 22 up there. That's close. If I can get you to the next verse, maybe you'll see that one. And that's probably saying abstain from every form of evil, isn't it? And we've sort of pulled that out of context to teach a lesson. The lesson is good, that even if there is the appearance, it looks like evil might be there, what's the best thing to do? Stay away from it. I'm not for sure that that's exactly what that verse was teaching, that it was teaching more every appearance of evil. But at least this is involved. So let's control our thoughts. Let's control our desires. Let's control the places that we go. And let's control our associates. And let's control our opportunities. And the best way to stay away from bad in either of these is to keep yourself busy with the things that are good. You know how to be sure that you don't misbehave in worship? Of course, we're not the ones that need that lesson. Just worship. When we're in the assembly worshiping, if you'll worship, you won't misbehave. And I'll tell you, one of the best ways to be sure that you don't become involved with anybody else's husband or wife, take care of your own. I still haven't found enough time to do that. It takes 25 hours a day. And I'll be glad to tell Judy that when I get home. You all won't have to. But if there's anywhere that the principle, if you take care of your own business, you won't what? You won't have time to be taking care of mine, right? Okay, there's one other thing that I want to show you. And this is something that's supposed to be a quote from Aristotle. I thought it hit the nail on the head. He identifies perfect temperance as being passion under reason. Do all of us have passions? I would hope so. We're not dead. Passion under reason. Unbridled lust is passion reigns supreme. Incontinence, reason fights. In other words, a person tries, but what? Passion prevails. Self-control, what happens? Reason fights and prevails. You think it can? Do you think that we can control anything that we need to if we really want to? Give me a verse that says that. That's a good one. Wasn't the one I had in mind, but it's a good one. 1 Corinthians 10:13. What about Philippians 4:13? I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. I believe we can control any situation if we will think, use these basic principles, and especially do it through Christ. I promise to close when? First bell, it rained. Appreciate you being here tonight. Next week, be here for VBS, and then the next week we'll go into patience, and I just can't wait.